The credit and regulatory cycle. There seems to be a special affinity between reflexivity and credit. That is hardly surprising. Credit depends on expectations. Expectations involve bias. Hence, credit is one of the main avenues that permit bias to play a causal role in the course of events. But there is more to it. Credit seems to be associated with a particular kind of reflexive pattern that is known as boom and bust. The pattern is asymmetrical. The boom is drawn out and accelerates gradually. The bust is sudden and often catastrophic. By contrast, when credit is not an essential ingredient in a reflexive process, the pattern tends to be more symmetrical. For instance, in the currency market, it does not seem to make much difference whether the dollar is rising or falling. The exchange rate seems to follow a wave-like pattern. I believe the asymmetry rises out of a reflexive connection between loan and collateral. In this context, I give collateral a very broad definition. It will denote whatever determines the creditworthiness of a debtor, whether it is actually pledged or not. It may mean a piece of property or an expected future stream of income. In either case, it is something on which the lender is willing to place a value. Valuation is supposed to be a passive relationship in which the value reflects the underlying asset, but in this case, it involves a positive act. A loan is made. The act of lending may affect the collateral value. That is the connection that gives rise to a reflexive process. It will be recalled that we have analyzed reflexivity as two connections working in opposite directions. The normal connection, where a value is placed on future events, as in the stock market or banking. We have called it the cognitive function. And a perverse connection, in which expectations affect that which is expected. We have called it the participating function. The participating function is perverse because its effect is not always felt, and when it does operate, its influence is so difficult to disentangle that it tends to go unrecognized. The prevailing view of how financial markets operate tends to leave the participating function out of account. For instance, in the international lending boom, bankers did not recognize that the debt ratios of borrowing countries were favorably influenced by their own lending activity. In the conglomerate boom, investors did not realize that per-share earnings growth can be affected by the valuation they place on it. At present, most people do not realize that the erosion of collateral values can depress the economy. The act of lending usually stimulates economic activity. It enables the borrower to consume more than he would otherwise, or invest in productive assets. There are exceptions, to be sure. If the assets in question are not physical but financial ones, the effect is not necessarily stimulative. By the same token, debt service has a depressing impact. Resources that would otherwise be devoted to consumption or the creation of a future stream of income are withdrawn. As the total amount of debt outstanding accumulates, the portion that has to be utilized for debt service increases. It is only net new lending that stimulates, and total new lending has to keep rising in order to keep net new lending stable. The connection between lending and economic activity is far from straightforward. That is, in fact, the best justification for the monetarist's preoccupation with money supply to the neglect of credit. The major difficulty is that credit need not be involved in the physical production or consumption of goods and services. It may be used for purely financial purposes. In this case, its influence on economic activity becomes problematic. For purposes of this discussion, it may be helpful to distinguish between a real economy and a financial economy. Economic activity takes place in the real economy, while the extension and repayment of credit occur in the financial economy. The reflexive interaction between the act of lending and the value of the collateral may then connect the real and the financial economy, or it may be confined to the financial economy. Here we shall focus on the first case. A strong economy tends to enhance the asset values and income streams that serve to determine creditworthiness. In the early stages of a reflexive process of credit expansion, the amount of credit involved is relatively small, so that its impact on collateral values is negligible. That is why the expansionary phase is slow to start with, and credit remains soundly based at first. But as the amount of debt accumulates, total lending increases in importance and begins to have an appreciable effect on collateral values. The process continues until a point is reached where total credit cannot increase fast enough to continue stimulating the economy. By that time, collateral values have become greatly dependent on the stimulative effect of new lending, and as new lending fails to accelerate, collateral values begin to decline. The erosion of collateral values has a depressing effect on economic activity, which in turn reinforces the erosion of collateral values. Since the collateral has been pretty fully utilized at that point, a decline may precipitate the liquidation of loans, which in turn makes the decline more precipitous. That is the anatomy of a typical boom and bust. Booms and busts are not symmetrical because, at the inception of a boom, both the volume of credit and the value of the collateral are at a minimum. At the time of the bust, both are at a maximum. But there is another factor at play. The liquidation of loans takes time. The faster it has to be accomplished, the greater the effect on the value of the collateral. In a bust, the reflexive interaction between loans and collateral becomes compressed within a very short time frame, and the consequences can be catastrophic. It is the sudden liquidation of accumulated positions that gives a bust such a different shape from the preceding boom. It can be seen that the boom-bust sequence is a particular variant of reflexivity. Booms can arise whenever there is a two-way connection between values and the act of valuation. The act of valuation takes many forms. In the stock market, it is equity that is valued. In banking, it is collateral. It is possible, although unlikely, that a boom could be generated without any credit expansion. The two examples we studied in the stock market, the REIT and conglomerate booms, could, in theory, have unfolded without the stocks being used as collateral, although in practice there was a lot of credit involved. In the absence of credit, the reversal would be a more gradual process. The contraction would not be a mirror image of the expansion, for the reason mentioned earlier. The reflexive element in valuations is greater at the time of reversal than at the inception of a trend. But the compression that is characteristic of busts would be absent. Both the boom-bust pattern and its explanation are almost too obvious to be interesting. The amazing thing is that the reflexive connection between lending and collateral has not been generally recognized. There is an enormous literature on the trade cycle, but I have not seen much awareness of the reflexive relationship described here. Moreover, the trade cycles that are generally discussed in textbooks differ in duration from the credit cycle I am discussing here. They are short-term fluctuations within a larger pattern. There is an awareness of a larger cycle, usually referred to as the Kondratiev wave, but it has never been scientifically explained. At present, there is much concern that we may be approaching another recession, but the general assumption is that we are dealing with a recession just like any other. The fact that we are in the declining phase of the larger cycle is usually left out of account. I contend that all previous recessions since the end of World War II occurred while credit was expanding, while the one we may or may not be facing now would occur when borrowing capacity in the real economy is contracting. This creates a situation that has no precedent in recent history. Exactly where we are in the larger cycle is difficult to determine. I must confess I have been confused on the issue since 1982. The reason for my confusion is that while the boom has clearly run out of steam, the bust has not taken place. Busts can be very disruptive, especially if the liquidation of collateral causes a sudden compression of credit. The consequences are so unpleasant that strenuous efforts are made to avoid them. The institution of central banking has evolved in a continuing attempt to prevent sudden, catastrophic contractions in credit. Since a panic is hard to arrest once it has started, prevention is best practiced in the expansionary phase. That is why the role of central banks has gradually expanded to include the regulation of the money supply. That is also why organized financial markets regulate the ratio of collateral to credit. Until now, the authorities have been able to prevent a bust. We find ourselves in a twilight zone where the normal process of credit expansion culminated long ago, but the normal process of credit contraction has been prevented by the authorities. We are in uncharted territory because the actions of the authorities have no precedent.